The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. It's good Monday. Unless you're the Waste Management Open. Wow. Phil Mickelson not coming. Phil Mickelson not coming. That is something. Won three times. We have Chris Cartman on today's show. Chris Cartman, SunDevilSource.com publisher. In fact, this is such a big deal, Eric said, get in studio. So let's have Chris in. Michael Fabiano will be with us, the NFL Network senior fantasy analyst. If you have any Arizona Cardinal players, you have decided fully, what am I doing with those guys on my team, I guess. I don't know. It is good to be back in studio. I've had a year. Been handling a surgery with my son up in Colorado, and it's a pretty severe deal, and he's going to be fine, I hope, long-term. But it's been I was very thankful for Thanksgiving. Let me just put it to you that way. We are brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most, and that is with life insurance. Believe you me, I've been thinking about life insurance and talking with people. I've had several people here in the last, I'd say about the last 3 months, that have reached out, that have said, you know, I've heard you talking about it, but I didn't really know what I needed. And so because of that, I wanted to reach out to you. Life insurance is something that you may not be thinking about today, but if you didn't come home tonight, would everything be handled? Would everything be protected? Would everything go the way that you would want for those you love and you care about? If the answer to that is, I'm not sure, I don't know, then log on to Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most, and that is with Sagicor. Eric is back. We're together today. I feel like this year, actually, because of surgeries and stuff, vacations. I never see you anymore.
It's nice to see you.
Well,
welcome,
thank you.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. It's been an adventure.
It always is.
You were at the Cardinal game yesterday. That was an adventure.
I was.
So if we were to talk about the worst Cardinal games that you have seen through the years, where would yesterday's rank?
Oh, wow. Seen so many of them. Yesterday was probably in the top five.
What happened?
I would say.
I was trying to watch it.
The Cardinals just decided to extend their bye week. That's pretty much all they did. It had the feel by halftime of a preseason game. That was the big vibe inside the press box. Like, the Cardinals are just going through the motions, and the Rams are using this as a get well game, clearly, because they got destroyed by the Ravens. I mean, Jared Goff didn't throw a touchdown pass the entire month of November, and he looked like, I don't know, the second coming of Tom Brady.
Well, yesterday. He had a tight end that Hassan Reddick was trying to cover.
Every team has a tight end that Hassan Reddick is
trying to cover. But he never can.
But, like, Patrick Peterson, he is no longer an elite cornerback. He's just a guy. Like, his fall from grace has been... Teams just don't care. They're just going to throw at him. They're playing so much zone. And
how much was it he was putting in his body?
Nobody wants to talk about that.
Nobody wants to talk about it. But guys do things. Look, if you or I don't know your caffeine intake, but there are days where I need a little bit of extra something to get through doing shows. I'm busy. I got stuff going on. I had double knee replacement. There's some days where I'm sitting here saying, just give me a shot of something. And so I can go get a Starbucks or fill in the blank, a Grove coffee, and all of a sudden I feel a lot better. Patrick Peterson, Eric, has not been able to take his stuff. And so is that what happens when you're not able to take your stuff?
Maybe.
Nobody wants to talk about that, but that's where we are in sports.
And he had a free shot at Jared Goff yesterday and just didn't even... Like, when the quarterback is trying to block you, that is an indication for you to do whatever you want to the quarterback. And Patrick Peterson not only didn't hit Jared Goff, he really made no attempt to stop the wide receiver. And everyone was just like, oh, my gosh.
So
zero effort.
So, you know, are you going to fire another defensive coordinator? Are you going to fire the general manager at some point? And like in Steve's case, we've known Steve a long time. He just needs to go. For his own betterment, for the organization's own betterment, it was a great run. Nobody has runs as long as Steve Keim has had within an organization. But there's been stuff that's happened off the field with him, the organization. If you look at the draft picks that he's selected, yeah, he's hit on some. He's missed on some. I think they abused David Johnson, and now we're seeing a shell of himself. And so they're going to have to move on from him. They're going to have to move on from Patrick Peterson. Larry can't sit around out here forever. And the feel good about Kyler Murray yesterday, he looked very ordinary and average, you know, and is he trying to play through injuries that happen in the NFL? The NFL, you got to play hurt. You know, that's just how it is. That was your final game, right, of the year?
Yes.
Because Jordan, is Jordan going next week? I haven't seen.
I think you're going next week and Jordan is going for the Cleveland game.
He's going for the Cleveland game. Okay.
So, well, I'll let you guys decide it.
Well, it's fine. I mean, it's going to be a Steeler home game.
It will be.
I mean,
and it'll probably be a Browns home game, I would think.
For sure. For sure. Like the there were empty seats yesterday, right?
Lots of empty seats, Brad.
But they announced a sellout, right?
Tickets sold is how they call it.
Yeah.
Tickets sold. They had 60,000 some odd tickets sold.
And how many of those people said, you know what, I really think I should use this ticket today to go
and watch.
Funny,
some people reached out to me and asked me if I was interested in buying Cardinal-Steeler tickets, like, an hour or two after the game. And I was like, no, no.
No, they're going to take a bath on that. No. Here's the thing. They only had 198 yards of offense yesterday, too. That's – if you're going to get fans excited to watch, like, I'll go to the game next Sunday or the Sunday after – and it's fine. It's, you know, it's what we do. But even so, you know what you're going to get at this point. You're just going to get guys that are going to say one thing, and then when the camera shut off, they're going to be like, I can't wait to get out of here. And so they're back in a position where they're not going to have the number one overall pick, likely. Likely.
They're in the seventh spot right now, I heard. If quote unquote, if the season ended today, the Cardinals would have the seventh pick.
So, I mean, that's a hard deal for them. But you start looking now. Now you are looking at, okay, they need an elite safety. They need an elite corner. They need. They've got to have one of these drafts where they get 3, 4, 5 guys. John Lynch has shown how it's done. 5 first-round picks on the defensive front, and all of a sudden he's mauling people. He's found a quarterback. I think they've got the quarterback here. I'm sure they have the quarterback here. So it was a waste. ASU, so I'm watching the game on Saturday night, and I'm not able to go. I'm in the space where I'm doing things more important, like taking care of my son who just had surgery all over him. And as I'm watching the game, they're making progress. And you hear things around the program, and Chris Cartman's going to be here momentarily. We'll talk further about it. It was not a surprise that Rob Likens was blown out. It was not a surprise that Donnie Yantis was let go. It was not a surprise that they made 3 coaching changes on the offensive side of the football. Somebody had to go because of the way the middle part of the season went. I thought Herm's explanation about how you have to score points, well, I don't know. That's been his style, is let's take the air out of the game. And so, yeah, Jaden is all that. Jaden has really progressed. He's a lot of fun to watch. When you watch how Eno has gotten better, he got better as the season went along. They weren't using him much. And they had a young offensive line. So, I don't know. It's always hard when a coach just knows. Like, those were two of the guys that were fired were Todd Graham guys. Donnie Yantis and Rob Likens were Todd Graham guys, so they're going to get fired. That's how it works in this business. So I thought yesterday was like, okay, yeah, sure, whatever.
And speaking of the Sun Devils, Brad and Chris Cartman, he just tweeted, ASU has added Prentice Gill to its staff, already recruited for the Sun Devils. He's on the road this week for visits. He will likely be the wide receivers coach. He was at Oregon as an analyst before USC, and he's considered a rising star recruiter. So
where's Derek Hagan in this?
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
It's a question for Chris.
Of course. He knows more about ASU than ASU does. So.
That's right. So we'll talk with Chris about that. But the only other thing that's caught my eye in sports, and there's been a lot, this Phil Mickelson story, if you're not aware, Phil Mickelson is passing on the Waste Management Open. And it's the first time that he has passed on this event. He's won this event 3 times. The amount of money to go play over on the European Tour, he's going to play in the Saudi International. And so when you have guys that aren't going to be in the event in Phoenix, you start looking at who's going to the Saudi Arabia. Well, Brooks Koepka is, Patrick Reed is, Sergio Garcia is, Henrik Stenson is, Shane Lowry is, Tony Finau is, like a lot of people. And this is going to be hard. Now, Phil's 49. He dropped out of the top 50 in the world for the first time since 1993. Was the Open in a space where, you know what, at some point we knew Phil wasn't going to come. We have Ricky as our defending champ. That's a great defending champion to have. I haven't seen where Ricky's out. But yeah, this story comes out today, the Phil Mickelson passing on the Open. That's something else. And U of A basketball's on my radar. For everybody that wanted to bury the U of A, and I'll admit, I was part of the group that said, Sean's got to go at some point. You just can't handle all the criticism and the stuff about DeAndre Ayton and all these guys coming in doing one and dones and becoming nothing outside of their time in Tucson for 1 year. Well, Alonzo Trier is on the Knicks roster last time I checked. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is in the NBA. DeAndre Ayton, we know what's happened with DeAndre Ayton. And the U of A is 9-0 now. They won yesterday. And man, is Nico Mannion fun to watch. Like, I'm finding myself every time the U of A plays basketball, I've got to watch them. I watched last night, opposite Sunday Night Football. It's, you know what? I just want to see how they do. And Nico's one of those once-in-a-generation players that, while I'm watching the Suns with Devin Booker, Nico Mannion in his Suns uniform look pretty good. Chris Cartman is next. Stay with us. Now we turn our attention to Arizona State football because the Sun Devils, they win over Oregon. They beat the U of A. They're not going to the Rose Bowl. It's been 23 years since they've been to the Rose Bowl. Many of you have said to me, I only want to go to the Rose Bowl. I don't want to go to the Red Box Bowl. I don't want to go to the Sun Bowl again. It's not happening. But are they making progress? I can sit here all day long and say, they're making progress. But I have to have somebody even better than that. That's Chris Cartman with Sun Devil Source. He joins us in studio because the season is over. Are they making progress?
I think that they are. Now, fans that got their, you know, hopes too high about some type of a 10-win season this year were kidding themselves, or they're just delusional.
They're close.
They really were.
2-point conversion at Oregon State. There's one.
Let me just put it this way. Yeah. How many games did ASU actually have clear separation from its opponents all season?
Not many.
Zero. Yeah. Right? Like Arizona pretty much was the only one. They required 3 comeback wins against
ranked
teams. Not
even Sac State.
Not even early on in the season, yeah. Right? So yeah. I really think, Brad, that the 5-1 season was a little bit deceiving for fans. Of course, they look at it like, well, if they had just done this or that, but they also could have easily lost games against Michigan State, Cal, et cetera, right?
Great coaching, though.
Well,
great play by Jaden Daniels, so you can spin it both ways.
Of course, but fans are going to see it totally glass half full, right?
Yes.
Like, so why couldn't we have just done this in the other games?
Right.
Doesn't really work that way, right? Before the season started, I said ASU was probably a 7-win team, give or take a game. That's where they ended up. That's what they were going to be if they played this season 100 times, 95 times. They would have been 6, 7, 8, maybe in a very rare occasion, 9 or 10. And I do get it that a special season kind of happens, you know, once maybe in a generation where everything kind of comes together. That 96 season was exactly like that for the Sun Devils.
Yep.
But their talent level and where they're at with their program right now is not comparable to that. They are still a very young team in a lot of respects. They're early in their evolution, mm-hmm. especially defensively, still trying to figure out what they're doing. They have a whole bunch of sophomores. Some of those guys had slumps this year and maybe didn't bought into their hype a little bit too much, especially after that 5-1 start, as Herm Edwards likes to describe it. Got a little bit too cocky and confident, believing in themselves a little bit too much, resulted in a 4-game losing streak. I think next year that defense is going to be a lot further along because they're not going to lose much at all. Kobe Williams is a big loss. Kalen Kurz-Thomas is a good player. George Lee, a good player. But I don't think that those guys are going to be really huge losses. Williams really is. If they can figure out a way to make that work, you know, maybe get Chase Lucas back, we'll see about that. Mm-hmm. Jack Jones is quite a talent, as was demonstrated against Arizona. And then if they can just get a couple complementary pieces, maybe a grad transfer offensive lineman or two, a couple other guys to surround Jaden Daniels with, they're in on some really, really big name guys in recruiting at wide receiver that I think can make an immediate impact also.
So it's kind of like PJ Fleck. J. Fleck goes to Minnesota and he inherits nothing or very little. And he gets better and he gets better. And yeah, they got worked last weekend by Wisconsin in the snow. But still, he's going into a space where I think Herm is third season, got to show a bigger improvement. got to get to 8 or 9 victories, not 6 or 7 victories. The schedule next year, it's UNLV. It's not like you look at the schedule and say, wow, they have a really tough road game. I feel like the space where he inherited the cupboard that was so bare on so many fronts, you've emphasized it on your spot at sundevilsource.com. I've talked about it here. I don't think fans really realize just how bad the program was in terms of talent acquisition.
Well, here's what happens. When you're at the tail end of a tenure, like Todd Graham was, you start to get really focused on what's immediately in front of you to save your job, right? So he wasn't thinking about recruiting offensive linemen for 3, 4, 5 years.
Not development, right.
Right. It's all about what is just in my immediate focus that I have to do to try to, you know, put this thing together. And so in the last 2 years, I think that they really slipped in that regard. And especially after, of course, as you know, they lost Mike Norvell, Chip Long, Chris Ball, all those guys, mm-hmm. right? And that's hard on a program. And they didn't have the right infrastructure built up to replenish from within. I think it's what happens at a lot of places around the country that are very successful is one guy out, next guy up, who's able to basically fill all of those roles. They have never had that at ASU. And I think that they're trying to build that now with Al Luganbill in the recruiting department, the way that Herm Edwards is more of a CEO type of a coach who's thinking big picture, not as much of this kind of immediacy, myopic sort of a position that ASU's been in. I think Ray Anderson didn't really do a lot of favors for Herm Edwards, his good friend, at the outset of the tenure with the way that he sort of characterized what he thinks is possible for ASU, because fans put that on a quicker trajectory. They thought that was going to happen right away. That was never going to happen right away, because in recruiting, it takes a few years to really get up to speed. And then it also takes a couple of years, maybe 2, 3, 4 years for those guys that you have recruited to be able to translate it to on the field. So I agree. 2020 is a really important year. 2021 is when they probably should be peaking.
It seems to me, on the outside looking in and just talking, Antonio Pierce is really running the program with Herm as the CEO. That really is how it appears to me. I'm going to cut through all the other stuff. Am I right?
Yes. I would say the trifecta of those two guys and also Luganbill. I think that's really the Herm, Antonio, Luganbill. That's the whole key. It took a little bit of time for them to sort of figure that out. That was what it was going to be. Remember, Donnie Yanis transitioning from Graham to Edwards was going to take on the recruiting coordinator role. That didn't last very long. It lasted a period of months. I think they realized that Southern California and where ASU has traditionally had the most of its recruits in its best years ever of football, mm-hmm. that's where they needed to be. That's where Pierce has his expertise. Danny Gonzalez, Tony White. Well, now they're trying to figure out how to leverage that further. Just actually today, as we're recording this, Prentice Gill, who's a analyst at Oregon, is now going to be taking a job at ASU, likely as a wide receivers coach. He's from Southern California, worked at USC as a graduate assistant. He's coached receivers there, deeply embedded into the Southern California recruiting fabric, knows Antonio Pierce really, really well, to your point, and was at Long Beach City College when Pierce was coaching at Long Beach Poly. So they have a great relationship. They're trying to take their recruiting department and put that on steroids.
So Derek Hagan, not wide receiver coach.
Derek Hagan's going to coach the bowl game at wide receivers. I wouldn't rule out the possibility of ASU maybe going with 2 wide receivers coaches and a graduate assistant coaching tight ends. Okay. That happens at times. So I think he still has a chance, but if they go with 1 receivers coach, probably not.
Chris Cartman with a Sun Devil source. Let's go through the checklist of who's going to stay, who's going to go. Eno Benjamin, staying or going?
He's going.
Chase Lucas, staying or going?
I think that's really on the fence. My inclination is he wants to leave.
Danny Gonzalez, staying or going?
Probably staying.
Anybody else that you think is going?
Well, they just lost 3 coaches, Brad. So
well, they didn't lose. They said, there's the door.
See you later.
Yeah, thank you for playing.
Yes, they said goodbye. And
on a player front.
Yeah, I think there probably will be a few more. I think what you're going to have this time of year is some guys that maybe weren't playing a big role as juniors or thinking about graduate transferring. Maybe some guys that haven't been all that successful or getting, you know, the ball as much as they want to, like a Curtis Hodges, somebody like that. I could see something happen there. They're going to have the smallest senior class in terms of scholarship players. that I've ever seen covering ASU. I think they'll probably end up with like six or seven seniors who are meaningful players. That's a very small number. And that also speaks to the fact that the following year, when a lot of these current sophomores and freshmen are seniors and juniors, is when I think that they're really going to mature.
NFL draft, how many guys off this team?
Good question. I would say probably 3 to 4 will end up getting drafted. We know Brandon Ayuk is going to be probably their highest draft pick. I would say he has a chance to sneak into the first if he tests well. Second round seems very likely. After that, of course, I think everybody's talking about Eno Benjamin. I think he didn't help himself this year with the fumbling. You can't really hold him accountable for the blocking issues. Mm-hmm. Still got over 1,000 yards, still great after contact. But the fumbling, coupled with maybe not being a 4.4 speed, you know, look amazing type of a guy, is a little bit of an issue. Cole Cabral probably didn't really help his stock out. I view them as kind of like maybe borderline third round guys, second to third round guys for Cabral and Benjamin. And then there's a few other guys that have a chance. Kobe Williams, as we mentioned earlier, I think he'd be a great late flyer.
If we look at the way that things laid out for Jaden Daniels this year, a year ago, I'm at the Vegas Bowl. You're at the Vegas Bowl. And it's my understanding he was brought up to the board at one of the rooms, and he was just killing it. I myself wasn't surprised. Were you surprised with how he played and performed this year?
We'll put it this way. Before the season started, I said that he was a generational talent as a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And even with that being the case, I was a little bit surprised. And primarily on the interception side, the balls in jeopardy. Among the top 50 passers in the country in terms of yardage this season, Jaden Daniels is the only guy who had two interceptions only. Okay, Fields at Ohio State won, but he had a lower passing total. He might have creeped.
Didn't need to throw the ball there.
He might have crept into that 50, yeah. but right. But my point is pretty clear. I expected that he would have 6, 7, 8 interceptions and very few balls that maybe should have been intercepted. So he is an incredible talent, a first-round type of a guy. He's been compared to Deshaun Watson. ASU fans, like, enjoy him now because he's only going to be around for 3 years. Then he's going to be gone. But we have to capitalize on that, right? If you're ASU, you're saying to yourself, how do we let Jaden Daniels go without us parlaying that into a Pac-12 championship, either when he's on campus or immediately after he's off of campus with maybe Joey Allen taking over or something like that. And I think in the recruiting, you know, standpoint, Brad, when he committed to ASU, that was a tectonic shift opportunity for ASU mm-hmm. in recruiting from Southern California. And now there's a lot of receivers around the West. Gary Bryant, LV Bunkley Shelton, Johnny Wilson, who's an Oregon commit who could switch. Those guys are going to want to play with Jaden Daniels. And so they have a chance to have their best recruiting class ever at wide receiver this year. And if that comes to fruition and they get the right coordinator in place to make it go, I think they can be really special.
Bowl game, it seems like, comes down to if Utah makes the college football playoff, ASU goes to the holiday. If not, they go to the Red Box. Is that about right?
I think the Red Box is very unlikely just because they've shown a tendency in the past to pick Stanford or Cal when given the opportunity to, even if they're not quite as good. I think that it'll be the holiday in the event that Utah or the two teams are in the NY6 bowls. And then I think after that, it'll probably be the Sun Bowl. There's a very outside chance that maybe it would drop down to the Cheez-It Bowl if the Vegas Bowl didn't want to take ASU for a second time in a row, if it wasn't one of those two. So there's a lot of scenarios. Mm-hmm. I think the Sun is the far and away the most likely.
I'm tired of El Paso. Are you tired of El Paso? Well, they're nice people in El Paso. The Boot Farm's nice. Nice hospitality. Been there, done that.
It would be nice to go back to San Diego again, right? Like,
I'd go to San Francisco again.
San Francisco is also a nice city.
Yeah, sure. Vegas was fine, but, you know, mix it up a little
bit. And it's New Year's Eve day. So, like, I'm done working at, like, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and I'm, like, trying to get on that last flight out of town for New Year's.
What is your biggest concern moving forward with this program as you sit here and you look at it?
Their offensive line situation. They're going to lose 4 seniors. They had 2 freshmen that started. I think Donovan West is going to be an all-league player. Ladarius Henderson has a chance in a couple of years. But who's going to really, you know, support those guys? This year they only had 1 offensive lineman on scholarship who was a sophomore or junior. That's like unheard of, right? So that's the situation that they were left in, and everybody wants the top, you know, transfers, you know, the grad transfers, everybody, they're in the portal, right? Everybody wants the very best ones, and they usually don't transfer. But I think ASU's got a good chance to get one of those guys. maybe get a couple of these freshmen who actually have looked really good while redshirting, Ben Scott in particular, I really like, to kind of rise up. And that's why I think that in 2 years, when you have like four of these guys probably starting, that's what Oregon did actually. Justin Herbert, when he was a freshman, he had four offensive linemen who were freshmen, and those guys all matured together. And then at the end of the day, they were all senior starters, and they're, you know, one of the
killed
top
it.
Teams in
yep.
the country. Yeah. Yep. So I think offensive line, especially if they can get grad transfers and watch the young player development there, that's really going to tell the whole story.
Chris Cartman, SunDevilSource.com in studio. Appreciate his time. And now we turn our attention to Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network, senior fantasy analyst, the weekly segment checking in on all fronts around the fantasy football front. We are not going to talk about how the Cowboys lost to the Bills, and we're certainly not going to talk about how the Cardinals ended up doing nothing at all in yesterday's game on that front. No, actually we will, because if you have Kyler Murray, if you have Christian Kirk, if you have Larry Fitzgerald, you were screwed yesterday. And the Cowboys are just, you know, Michael, we haven't talked in a few weeks. I don't mean to rub it in, but what's going on?
First off, I hope your son is doing okay.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Second off, the Cowboys stink. I'm fed up with them as a fan. I've never been this frustrated, at least not lately. I don't know, man. I would really have loved to have seen them just gone away from Jason Garrett and give you know, Chris Richard a shot to maybe rally the troops and see what can happen, because nobody wants to win the NFC East. Like, nobody. I mean, the Eagles lost to the Dolphins yesterday, and the Cowboys lost to the Bills, and then the Cowboys have the Bears, and then the Rams coming up, and then the Eagles, and then Washington in Week 17. So the good news is that from a fantasy perspective, I mean, the team is still sort of producing, right? I mean, outside of that New England game, you know, last week, Amari Cooper had a nice game, Zeke, Dak Prescott. So they're still getting it done for fantasy owners. In terms of real football, listen, man, I, again, very frustrated as a Cowboys fan. I was a bit upset that Garrett still has a job. But I guess the Cowboys, I don't know, they just don't do that kind of thing. They're not making people sort of responsible for their jobs and doing a poor job of it. I mean, they even kept Brett Maher, who's been awful lately, and it's just been super, super frustrating. The good news is that these guys are still very, very fantasy relevant. Dak Prescott's having his best fantasy season. Zeke, not having his best season, still pretty solid. Amari Cooper came back from a bad game against the Patriots and was much better last week against Buffalo. And now we'll see what happens. In terms of the Cardinals, though, I hate to say this. David Johnson, I mean, you can drop him at this point.
Done.
He played 24% of the offensive snaps. Kenyon Drake played almost 80. And David's just not good. You're there. I'm not. I don't know if he's not healthy. Chase Edmonds, you know, he didn't have an offensive snap, so I don't know what's going on there. But Kenyon Drake's the featured back for the Cardinals now. And David Johnson at this point, if there's a hot receiver that you want to pick up off the waiver wire, maybe a James Washington, for example, maybe you want to grab another running. David's he's irrelevant in fantasy, which hurts me to say, because I like the guy and he was a first round pick in a lot of drafts. But I mean, he has gone from being locked and loaded into your lineup every single week to now really having no value. And I don't know that he's going to have any value unless Kenyon Drake goes down with some sort of an injury. And I talked about this last week on the show, where I said, you know, Larry Fitzgerald might be your best option for fantasy production. And I didn't like Christian Kirk because of the matchup against Jalen Ramsey. And I mean, Fitz gave you double-digit points, but I mean, at this point, Fitz is also a guy that you consider dropping.
Yep.
If there's a hot player off the wire that you need to pick up, he's someone now that you could. I wouldn't drop Christian Kirk. Clearly, I'm not dropping Kyler Murray, but you know, Fitz at this point, after a pretty hot start to the season, he's really been unreliable from a fantasy perspective.
Okay, so if we're looking at playoffs right now, and we're looking at the way the season went out, and you already answered it about David Johnson. I'll get to the playoffs part in a second. Give me a bigger bust this year. If we're talking like top five busts this season, and you like David, I like David. David in the world of fantasy is a total bust. Who would be there alongside of him this season of this magnitude? If you're looking at first round picks, I mean, I know guys put Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown was going to be in this mix, in this conversation, but after that, where do you go?
I mean, the name that comes to mind is Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah.
He's not even in the top 30. in terms of fantasy points per game among wide receivers. So that he's been a disappointment. Le'Veon Bell is not produced up to being a first round pick, and he's coming off a stinker. So you could put him into that category. Todd Gurley, and it's not having anything to do with Le'Veon, I'll be quite honest with you. And you know, you're also looking at Todd Gurley, although starting to look like Todd Gurley, but now you know you're looking at a player who, at the end of the season, his numbers are not going to match where he was drafted, which was the second round in most leagues. Juju Smith-Schuster has also been a huge disappointment off the top of my head. Joe Mixon, up until recently, has not been worth a second-round pick. James Conner's been good when he's been active. Unfortunately, he hasn't been active lately, and I don't know when he's coming back. So those are just a few of the names. But you know, I hate to say it, but you know, David and OBJ are probably the two biggest ones to this point in the season. I mean, we're already in the fantasy playoffs.
All right, let's get into the waiver wire because it is playoffs. And Jordan Wilkins' name over at the Colts has come up quite a bit. What are your thoughts?
So here's the thing. We thought it was going to be Jonathan Williams. He had two straight good games in a row. He had almost 30 touches last week. And then they go to Wilkins. But they also used Williams a bit. They also used Nyheim Hines. And they've got Tampa Bay this week. So I got to be honest with you, I'm avoiding that backfield. I mean, if you want to pick up Wilkins, that's fine if he's a flex starter for you. But if you're going to start Jordan Wilkins in the first week of your fantasy playoffs, I mean, it is only as a flex, and it is not a confident start. Let's put it that way. The Buccaneers' defense is really good against the run. And this is a situation in Indianapolis that's gone from, well, we know Marlon Mack's going to get the ball, so you can start him knowing at least he's going to get touches, to week, we're not sure. And that makes it tough to start any one of those guys with confidence.
Okay, so what about the wide receiver side with the Colts? Because T.Y. Hilton, hamstrings been an issue, getting questions about Zach Pascal. What do you do there?
I mean, Zach Pascal's he's going to be an add off the waiver wire because the Buccaneers, as good as they are against the run, not good against wide receivers. Although, thanks for nothing, D.J. Chark. that was a stinker yesterday. I like D.D. Westbrook too, but boy, D.J. Chark just did nothing. But Pascal is going to be an option. I mean, hopefully you pick up Jack Doyle. I talked about him last week. He was my start of the week at tight end, and they're going to throw him the football with Eric Ebron and T.Y. banged up, as you mentioned. So Pascal would be the target for me if you're going to be going after a Colts wide receiver.
So the Steelers come here to take on the Cardinals. Cardinals defense, Patrick Peterson cannot cover anybody. And James Washington, you mentioned him earlier. Tell me about Steelers this week, because that looks like a matchup. I'm getting some questions in the mailbag about that.
James Washington is a player that I've been talking about for several weeks now. He was one of my sleepers a couple of weeks ago, and then this past week, because Juju's out, because Deontay Johnson has really not produced over the last couple of weeks, and of course he had that horrible hit in the Cleveland game. But at this point, it's all based on what happens with Juju Smith-Schuster. If he's inactive, then James Washington is going to have some value because Duck Hodges clearly has a good rapport with him. There was even reports that they went hunting together earlier in the week, so I'm sure they talked about some plays that they can potentially knock out of the park, and they did that on that one big play in the game yesterday where Washington scored a touchdown. So Washington's going to be a popular add. I mean, if you're in a 2QB league, I mean, this is really stretching it. But Duck Hodges against the Cardinals is going to be something that people are thinking about.
Yep.
It really is, because that's where we're at right now, Brad. Like, when David Blau, a third-string quarterback for the Lions, comes out and gives you almost 18 points against the Bears, I mean, it's crazy. I talked about it on the podcast. I said, if a starting quarterback goes down in the National Football League, they shouldn't go to the number two. They should go to the number three. Because between David Blau and Nick Mullins last year, and now you've got Duck Hodges, these guys are out doing the number two. It's ridiculous. So anything's possible at this point. But James Washington, if he's not owned in your league, he certainly should be. And then Vance McDonald, he's gotten dropped in a lot of leagues because he hasn't done much of anything. But again, a backup tight end yesterday. Tyler Higbee went in and just, I mean, crushed the Cardinals.
Yep.
If picking fantasy football starts and sits every week was as easy as starting the tight end against the Cardinals, it'd be boring because every week you're right. Every single week it's just been somebody else just killing this team. So Vance McDonald's going to be worth an add off the waiver wire as well.
How about Darwin Thompson before I get you out of here? What are you hearing on that front?
So, right, you have to sort of keep tabs on the status of Damian Williams. We know that you know, Darrell Williams had a non-contact. Not sure, wouldn't expect him to be able to play. But LeSean McCoy is also there, and they're playing the Patriots.
Yeah.
And as crappy as the Patriots looked last night, you can't run on them. I wouldn't play any Chiefs against the Patriots this week. Not LeSean McCoy, not Darwin Thompson. I mean, if he ends up getting the start, which I don't think he will because McCoy is there, maybe he's a flex, but I'm not starting any Chiefs running backs if I can help it in week 14.
As always, I appreciate your time and the nice wishes too. Thanks, Mike.
All right, pal. Go easy.
Take care. Michael Fabiano with us, NFL Network Senior Fantasy Analyst. Always good to catch up with Michael. I'm just going to keep it here, Jared, before we get out of here. And so Michael mentioned there off the top, I'm trying to address stuff that comes up as we go. And I feel like this year has been the year of just addressing. Eric, have I just addressed, like how many times have I done this show where I've got to talk to you guys about a health thing that's come along this year? Are you just kind of done with this or?
No, that would be insensitive.
Well, it's.
I just know more than the audience knows. So that's all.
So I'm just going to give it in a nutshell here what happened. So about a month ago, son comes home from high school. He said, strength coach says I'm squatting rather awkwardly with my right leg. It looks like it's pointed outward. And he thinks I should go get it checked. Fine, we go get it checked. They check it. Doctor looks at us. This is the same orthopedic that did my wife's rotator cuff. We know him very well, trust him implicitly. And he just says he's done with sports. He needs to go to either a doctor in St. Louis or a doctor in Vail, Colorado, orthopedic. So this is like a month ago, just over a month ago. And so in the last month, we've gone from a diagnosis to going to Vail, to the Stedman Clinic, which is phenomenal. If you've ever been in the world of orthopedics or you've been in sports through the years and you've heard where a player has been sent to the Stedman Clinic, I now know why. It's amazing. And when you walk in there, it's nothing but pro jerseys, college jerseys. It's all sports. It's just the place. So they ended up doing what they call an osteotomy on my son. They end up breaking his pelvis. They end up moving his hip 20 degrees because his hip was pointed the wrong direction. This all happened last month. So it was a very happy Thanksgiving. It's been a really hard grind at times, but it's been a tremendous blessing to see people just rally, friends just rally, my son just rally, doctors rally, people rally. I'm energized by what we've been through. And sometimes you got to go through tough stuff. It's the palm tree, right? Get really deep here on you. Palm tree gets blown over in the monsoon, but the roots never come out. And then when the monsoon passes, palm tree goes back up. I feel like I'm a palm tree. And so my son's in a wheelchair, so I'm learning a lot about that in that space. I've seen a lot in that space, putting him in a wheelchair and going through airports or a Lowe's yesterday, and just people don't care about people in chairs. They just don't know the space. And it's frustrating. So it's going to be 6 more weeks of him in a chair. It's really eye-opening, and for my wife and I, it's been a big experience. And for him, it's a life experience. So that's where I've been. And I'll just leave it at that. Jared Nielsen is the Iron Man. Jared is here not day after day. He's here a lot. And he's the Iron Man for many reasons. Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Everything. Jordan Hamm and Sandy Charles and Devin Henry. They've all had my back through this, which I appreciate. And we're going to turn around now and work on our TV show, which is over on Fox Sports Arizona. Thanks for being with us. Enjoy your day.